Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, I'm still eating cake. Welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed and this is Marek Larwood.
Hello, film lovers and people who have found this by accident. Welcome to yet another episode of us talking about films. It's insightful and also non-insightful at the same time. What have you been, David? All right?
Yeah, I've been okay. Yes, I've been fine. I guess I've been busy. You know, keeping busy. Nothing to report.
Okay, well, let's get straight into the film chat.
All right. What did you go to see this week?
I saw a film that's at the cinema. It's also out on demand, so I watched it from the BFI on demand. And it's £10 it costs, which is ridiculous for on demand films.
It is a bit.
It's a French film. It's called 2 days, one night, which the translation is
today.
Deux jours, une nuit. It stars Madeleine Cotillard, but it's Marion Cotillard, who you all know from Rust and Bone.
Yes, and Dark Knight Rises.
And she infamously played, she won an Oscar.
Oh, is she?
Playing Edith Piaf.
Yes, in La Vie en Rose. I've still not seen that.
She's remarkable.
Have you seen it?
I saw bits of it a while back, but I think I was drunk at the time.
Okay.
And that is the sort of insights you get from our podcast. It's directed by the Dardenne brothers. I've seen one of their other films called The Kid with a Bike, which is about a woman who sort of adopts this difficult kid. It was quite boring. They're known for their sort of hyper-realistic style. So the story of this film is that Marion Cotillard is a mother of two children and with her husband. They're very poor, live in a sort of poor sort of suburbs of an area of France. She's had a problem with depression, so she's been unable to go to her work. But because they're quite poor, they need their payments to pay for the mortgage. And she finds out from a co-worker that the boss has told all the other employees, there's about 12 employees, that either they can have a €1,000 bonus and she gets laid off, or she keeps her job and they're not allowed her bonus.
Okay.
Not allowed that bonus. So the story is her going round to all of the co-workers which she's had different relationships with and pleading with them to allow her to continue in her job and sacrifice the bonus, and she needs to get the 12 votes. So it's been likened to, in terms of the premise, like 12 Angry Men, the courtroom scene where they've got to persuade, where the one guy might get to persuade the whole court to get majority to, well, it's got to be all of them, isn't it, for the 12 Angry Men. So similar to that, she needs to get 7 people to vote for her in the vote so she persuades her boss to have a re-vote.
So is it a sort of character odyssey, really, where you get to see these 12 different colourful characters, or?
Well, I have numerous problems with this film, and for once, for regular listeners, I'm a big lover of French films.
Yeah, a francophile.
Yes.
Loves Franco.
And this is the one exception. I thought it was terrible. Firstly, what sort of boss would say to their employees, I'm going to give you €1,000 or this person gets the sack, and make it If a boss did that to
Willy Wonka, maybe would do it, but
yeah, not in real life. It's such a crazy. And if that happened in the workplace, it would destroy the whole morale. You think, well, I'm not going to work for you if you're offering me money, almost bribing me, or saying sack this person. You don't put people in that position. You just say, I'm not letting that person off.
Yeah.
You don't put it to a vote.
Well, you're making it your workforce's problem. Whether,
yes.
Whether this person is fired or not.
It absolutely doesn't make sense. The whole premise does not make sense.
That's a shame.
And for that ruined the film in a way for me, because...
Because Marion Cotillard is fantastic, I think. Well, I thought in Rust and Bone she was amazing.
She's on the upside. I'll go to the... I'll talk about her.
Okay.
She's a phenomenal actress.
Yeah.
She's got one of those faces... I don't know, she's beautiful, and she's got those eyes which you can look at. I mean, you can just... Forever... What are they called? What's a nice word for expression for saying...
what, you've got...
You can get lost in her eyes,
that's,
sort of thing.
That's the cliche, yeah.
Yeah. So she's very, very watchable, and the performance is very, very realistic. So if, here we go, is he going to stop barking? Oh, is the postman arriving?
No, buddy's just checking out the post.
So it's... Her acting performance is so good. It's just watching like someone in real life. It's totally believable. And there is my second problem, is that they're known, these two brothers, are making these very, very realistic sort of slices of life.
Yes.
And people have raved about it. Like, I was reading this Peter Bradshaw's, who's a journalist in The Guardian, here at 5 stars, and said it was, you know, incredible bit of filmmaking. It's boring.
Oh, that's
it
a
is
shame.
Boring.
And you love French films.
I love French films. All she does is just go around people's houses. It's like following me around the camera, going around someone's house, saying, oh, he's Barry in. Someone opens the door. Oh, no, he's at the cafe. I'll go down to the cafe then. Barry, can I talk to you? Yeah. I was wondering whether you would vote for me in the secret ballot I've managed to persuade him to do on Monday to keep my job. I feel really sorry for you, but I need the money because I'm poor. Okay, then. Well, I'll see what I can do. Bye. Next house. Bing bong. Hello, is Jules in? No, he's down at the football training ground.
Okay. I would say, from a script editing point of view, you could cut all of those is Jules in bits and just have Jules be in. That would save some time.
But
then
they would just be knocking on people's I think it's trying to get different locations.
Okay. Well, what if they get a text message saying Jules is at the training ground? You know, and then they can just go straight there.
She hasn't got all their numbers, so that's a sort of gets around the phone dome we have of
okay.
being able to call people.
Okay.
That she has to go around people's houses.
Well, it sounds tedious.
It was remarkably tedious. And I'm not a fan of reality TV. I think it's terrible. But if this was a reality television show, that would be far more interesting.
Yeah.
Because what's the point of making a film that's so realistic that it feels like a reality show?
And it's as boring as real life.
And it is boring. It's there's no real drama. The characters and you don't get to know any of these other characters because she's just going around ringing on their doorbell and they're just appearing for 2 minutes. And some she doesn't like, and some don't feel sorry for her, and some sort of support her. And she does this about 10 times. And then they go and sorry for these spoilers. Then she just arrives at the workplace, which is a fairly rubbish job, and they have a secret ballot.
Okay.
That's pretty much the film.
And there's a result. So there's tension there. They've built it up over 12.
She is the single reason to watch this film.
Okay.
She's a brilliant actress. And I think you could just have Marion Cotillard, you know, running a shoe shop. And I say, okay, Marion, I just want you to... Serve different customers, but in the back room, you've got someone tied up being kidnapped in the room. You're holding hostage and you're not the real shoe shop owner. And just improvise it. That would be a better film. I think you're in such safe hands with her. She's a remarkable actress, so you put her on screen and then you don't need to worry because she's always going to make anything... She's
yeah.
innately watchable. This film is dull, and people like Peter Bradshaw banging on about how great it is. Were you watching the same thing as me? Because it is so boring. It reminded me of a terrible version of The Bicycle Thieves, which we watched recently.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was a 1930s Italian... film.
Italian neorealistic cinema.
Yes. Where the dad and the son are trying to find his bike and they visit all these places.
Yeah.
Whether that
sounds very like that.
Yeah, it's the same sort of premise. Whether that's more interesting because we're watching now from a different age. So it seems we watch all the 90s. It seems you watch all the footage, old footage.
Well, there's more to engage with because you don't see this stuff every day. Like, you see Gilles every day, don't you? You see doorbells and you see training grounds every day. So, oh, that's disappointing.
I didn't get it at all, and people have raved about it. I was disappointed. I watched it with my girlfriend, and she says it's really boring.
She thought the same thing.
Yeah.
It's interesting, this two brothers sharing a job thing, isn't it? It seems to crop up every now and again with film directors.
Coen brothers.
Wachowski used to be brothers when they directed the Matrix films. Would you direct anything with your brother, one of your brothers?
No.
Why?
Because I've got two brothers.
And the other one would feel left out.
Yes.
Why not three?
Oh, I wonder how I'd feel if they both started directing things together. And they left me out.
They didn't cast you in.
But they didn't mention it to me at all. Oh, we're sitting around the Christmas table. Oh, we've started directing films.
Oh.
Okay, but I thought the film business was my thing. No. We've started doing it. We've done really dull films about a garden centre on the Isle of Wight, and Peter Bradshaw from The Guardian's given it five stars and said it's like it's the equivalent of When the Wind Blows.
Your friend David's in it, actually, as is your girlfriend
and all of your friends. That would be a disturbing thing to do. Make a film about someone, their life. It's almost like the famous Christmas one when he forgets.
It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, but they're making a film about your life without you in it.
And then the final scene is them telling you and you watching it.
Yes,
that's a movie right there.
It's incredible how easy it is to make these films.
Just giving it out to free.
Yeah,
for free to people who, you know, they're too lazy to go and do something. They're just listening to a podcast, so none of them are ever going
to
do it.
My question to you, David, is on the back of this film, and to our millions of listeners, have you ever watched a film that has been universally applauded by the critics and you think, I just do not get this film? I have no...
Ooh. That's a good question.
Because that was Barbarian Sound Studio, which Mark Kermode had his film of the year, which I watched it and I thought that was just tedious as well.
Oh, now that you've put me on the spot there, because I've definitely felt that before, but I can't recall any off the top of my head. The only one I can think of is Television, which is Seinfeld, which I don't get at all, and it's heralded as the greatest comedy of all time, and I watch it, I go, I can't even analytically work out what's supposed to be funny here. I don't get it. It's just people talking. It's all it is.
But you feel a bit at odds with humanity.
Yeah, you just go, what am I missing here? This must be my fault.
Walking into the Matrix and thinking, oh, this is not... there's some sort of numbers missing here. This doesn't work out.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, probably, you know, things like The Avengers and stuff. I didn't think was very strong at all. I thought it was sort of rubbish. It's usually ones with rubbish stories, actually, that other people love the little bits and pieces and don't really care about the story. But
so I give it 4 Mareks. Do not spend £10 downloading this from the BFI.
There's a recommendation for you. Go and see a better Marion Cotillard film instead.
I'm going to blow my nose now.
Do,
apologies.
Do, it's been a cornucopia of noises this episode so far. It started with me eating cake and it's carried on like that. Better French films next time, hopefully.
If you want to write in and tell us about your film experiences, please do. You can do so in the following ways.
You can email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com, or you can write on our Facebook wall and talk to one another. facebook.com/filmfandango, or you can tweet us at filmfandango or at Mr. David Reed or at Marek Larwood. And I may as well mention it now, we do all of this for free, so if you would like to donate towards our running costs so we can continue to do it for free, then please go to filmfandango.co.uk and follow the link from there. And to everyone who has, cheers mate.
Thank you, people.
Thank you, people. That's the polite thing to say, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you, people.
Hey, tell you what.
What?
It's time for the middle section.
Woo, do we have one?
Yeah.
Fine, yeah. Okay.
We're going to talk about soundtracks.
Okay, yep, yeah, movie soundtracks.
So I thought of a lot of people say, Merrick, what are your favourite movie soundtracks? No one said to me. But I was in the pub the other night and talking about listening to music and how as I've got older, I found myself listening to a lot more classical music and a lot more film soundtracks.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to hear people talking.
Fair enough.
What's wrong, buddy?
He's heard a dog.
My iPod's become full of film soundtracks. So I just thought I'd go through my favourite five film soundtracks.
Do it.
Have you got any?
I can't do a favourite five. I didn't. The game was ill-defined beforehand, but I can talk about film soundtracks.
Okay.
Well, go through your five, and then we'll see what happens.
Well, at number five is a soundtrack by famous soundtrack maker, famous composer Ennio Morricone.
Oh, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah.
It's not that one.
I'm not picking soundtracks, I'm picking my favourite songs from my favourite individual songs. I should be clear on that. So it was going to be close. I had to pick one of his, either The Mission, which I almost picked.
I love The Mission soundtrack, as in that the theme.
As in the theme Mission.
Blah 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 blah. What? How's it go again?
It's a lot of panpipes.
It is. It is beautiful. We can recreate them by singing them. That's fine.
We can't play. I looked at playing clips, and I don't know if we've got a license to play clips or whatever. So we're just gonna. You can write these into YouTube and see what you think. That almost got in, but instead I picked The Strength of the Righteous.
What is that?
Which is the main title theme for The Untouchables.
Ah, yes, yes. Remind me.
Doodle-dum. 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 That one.
That one. It's great. It's great.
Which is sort of made famous, I think.
Is that Ennio Morricone as well?
Yes.
Wow. He's done a lot of good stuff.
That's made famous by the infamous scene in the station where they come down the prams, I think.
Yeah, the recreation of the battleship Potemkin scene.
Yes, which is wonderful. That is my number five. So please look up and see if you enjoy that. Number four, I've gone for David Shire, who's also composed many beautiful soundtracks. And I do like All the President's Men, which is the one called Creep, I think, from that, which is great. But instead of that, I picked the main theme from The Conversation.
Yes.
Which is a very simple piano bit.
Do it for us now.
Boom, 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 boom. It sounds like I can't really. Listen, I'm not musically inclined. But look up the theme from The Conversation by David Shire.
It is very good.
A really melancholic bit of piano playing and very, very simple.
Brilliant film as well.
Wonderful film. And I think that he did that in between The Godfather and Apocalypse Now, and it's sort of like his lost. Not lost, but I think it's not considered in the same ilk as those by a lot of.
It is a bit of a crime that Enemy of the State is more famous as a film, but it's good in its own way. It's a completely different genre, but yes.
Number three is from the Moon soundtrack, which is one of my favourite films by Clint Mansell, and it's called Welcome to Lunar Industries, which is a very haunting soundtrack. And after this, Clint Mansell went on to do. He's done like Requiem from a Dream as well. Yeah. He was the former lead singer of A Pop Will Eat Itself.
Oh,
yeah. What else has he done recently that's quite big? He's in The Wrestler, Noah Stoker. He's in quite a lot of Black Swan.
So lots of sort of psychologically. Cerebrally sort of things.
Yeah, I think he's great.
How's the Moon one go?
I can't.
Is it impossible? It doesn't really have a melody.
I feel as though I'm embarrassing myself. No, and it sounds like one of these podcasts where I listen back to it and really start to hate myself.
Does that happen a lot?
Yeah, no.
Right, okay.
That's number three. Number two, I know you're all getting pretty excited by this. Number two is Anthem Part 2, which is the music from The Truman Show.
Okay, yeah.
When he, made by Philip Glass, who is a fantastic composer.
Yes.
It was actually on one of his albums before, and I think they took this off this and put it onto The Truman Show soundtrack. So I'm not sure if it's legitimately made for the film itself. And the moment when he's, I think I just say spoilers for The Truman Show, where he starts to discover that things are going weird in the town and people are moving around the same way and the same cars are coming through, and it's that moment of his brain discovering it, which has captured the music. You'd think it was written for that piece.
Yes.
Because it feels perfect. And number one, I think it's a very simplistic piece by Hans Zimmer, who's done loads of famous film soundtracks.
Huge number.
Is Time from Inception. And Inception.
Oh, the Inception album. Is it that one?
No, it's really gentle.
Oh, okay.
It's
not the main Work theme.
Not the Work one.
Work.
But it's a brilliant soundtrack. So have a listen to all of those, and please send in any great soundtracks you think. Ones that almost got there. I think Drive as a whole album and the whole soundtrack is brilliant. They're my favourite individual songs from soundtracks. I hope that was moderately interesting.
I agree. There's so many as well that you go, oh yes, yeah, that was amazing. Because in terms of sound in films generally, I think it's considered a visual medium, but sound does so much of the work in terms of tying images together so it feels like a continuous thing. And the music on top of that does so much of the atmosphere, where there are YouTube examples of people putting different songs over famous scenes and it feels utterly different, you know? There's a I've mentioned it before and I will try and find it, because we actually had somebody asking on, I think, Facebook about it. But where someone's made Star Wars look like a 70s cop show, and all it takes is the music and picking of shots. They've not changed the stock or anything, and you just go, it looks exactly the same. But the old maxim that if you can have crappy quality pictures, as long as your soundtrack is good, and that then looks like a stylistic choice. If you have a crappy quality soundtrack and good pictures, it looks like amateurs. And it's just, that shows just how important the sound of it is. Like, I thought about this a bit, and it's like, the ones that have stuck out in my head initially, Ennio Morricone as well, just so many iconic themes, but The Good, the Bad and the Ugly, I thought, was one that was absolutely fantastic. You know, the whole... Just like, coming up with that is... And stick it in that... you know, dust bowl atmosphere and those visuals, and it just works when the two just work so well together. The other one being Vangelis' theme for Blade Runner. Like, it's so weird, the music, but it is rainy, neon, you know, future LA. It just, the images go with the music so well.
Another one is great, I should have probably mentioned, is Suspiria, Goblin, the soundtrack to that. Has got sound. I don't know what the instrument is, but it's such an unusual sound. It's so disconcerting. Maybe it's a great way of trying out new sounds, because you're trying to find these moods from the film. You've already got the mood, so you're trying to find these weird instruments to make the film. To replicate what's going on in the film. But I find if you're having a really mundane, boring life, which a lot of my life is, traveling on the tube.
Yeah.
Certain things, like listening to the Untouchables theme, the Strength of the Righteous on the Tube, suddenly makes it more exciting.
So it feels like your journey, you're heading towards peril,
especially
and
if
you're a really important person.
Especially if you're late and you want to walk up the escalator, you have to run up the escalator.
Yeah.
Put that on and it seems like you're in a film. It's a lot easier.
Well, that's basically what jogging is. Jogging is one of the most boring things you could ever do, but stick on a soundtrack and it's like you're running away from something or towards something. You are an important person doing an important thing.
But I just listen to sound wider. I'm listening to soundtracks rather than songs.
No, that's not. But I mean, the two overlap, obviously. I mean, it's I think Tarantino probably should get honourable mention, that his stuff isn't usually scored, not in the same way. But my God, he's good at picking songs that work really well with his films and are sort of either forgotten classics or hidden gems that people didn't know about, and he makes them popular. I mean, Reservoir Dogs does it brilliantly.
Yeah.
Pulp Fiction does it better. And then actually Jackie Brown has a fantastic soundtrack. It's just a less well-known film.
But the Kill Bill, the main music from that, is phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And just, he must have such an encyclopedic knowledge of, like, music from decades past to be able to draw on and just go, yeah, that bit of music is what this is all about. Well, I heard he actually writes whilst listening to the song he has in mind.
That's what I think. He must really... Well, I'd be interested to see what bits of film, what short film has been written for the actual songs.
Yeah.
I know there must be loads of examples of these, but...
And then they can't get that song, so they have to get their mate to do something rubbish on a keyboard.
That's slightly worse.
Slightly worse than it. Yeah.
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 So have you seen the film, David?
Oh, I've seen the film, mate, yeah.
I have wanted to see this film for a while. I finally found it.
Flashdance.
Flashdance, have you heard of it?
No, it's not that.
It's about a welder. No, I saw a film called Calvary.
That's what Paul Litchfield talked about the other week.
Yes, he mentioned it, yeah.
Brendan Gleeson, right?
Brendan Gleeson. And it's the second film he's done with the director and writer, who is John Michael McDonough. So this is...
What is the first one that he did?
The Guard is the first
one. I enjoyed
that. And it's apparently going to be part of a sort of unrelated in terms of characters, but trilogy of films, because there's a theme, and I won't tell you the theme because it might spoil things. But yes, The Guard, which I think is brilliant, and Calvary is this latest one. Brendan Gleeson plays a priest... on a Irish island. I think it's on an island. Certainly feels that way from the cinematography. It might be on the mainland, though. And in the opening scene, someone comes into his confessional and says that he was molested as a child for years by a priest who is now dead, so there's nothing he can do about it. And so... because the priesthood took his innocence, he is going to kill this priest because he knows this priest hasn't done anything wrong, but he's going to kill him a week on Sunday, and he tells him where he's going to kill him, and that's the setup. And so the rest is this priest and what he does and going about his business.
Is that a believable, we're going back to the first one we talked about, is that a believable setup?
It's a hyper-real setup, but in the context of this film it works. Yeah. In fact, my only criticism of this film would be sometimes the script feels a little like it's in the head of the writer and not in the mouths of the performers, if you know what I mean.
Always put it in a performer's mouth.
Stick it right in their gobs. What I mean by that is a lot of the characters use similar vocabulary to one another. And it's quite writery. Vocabulary, you know, I would say getting close to pretentious but never quite hitting it, but so you can sort of pass it off as, oh, they're Irish, they're all lyrical and poetic, possibly. It's the tiniest of niggles and it doesn't spoil the film at all. I thought this was brilliant.
Really,
really good. Really good. Brendan Gleeson is so good and so watchable, and I loved him in Bruges and The Guard, as I said. He's been in so many other films where he's sort of, you know, he's that guy in that thing.
He's a sort of rugged Irish guy you get into, add a bit of flavour.
He's tall, he's broad-shouldered, you know. He's sort of like a sort of ageing muscle is his sort of thing. So he plays Mad-Eye Moody in the Harry Potter films, and he plays a sort of thug in Gangs of New York, which is terrible. He's all over the place. He's in everything. But as a lead, he has so much going on in his face and his eyes, and he is incredibly charismatic.
It's great we've got people like him, yeah. You know, rather than the chiselled, normal leading men.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the supporting cast is excellent as well. It's, you know, sort of a who's who of Irish talent at the moment, really. So
who is?
Well, it's got Chris O'Dowd is in it in a straight role, and he's very, very good. It's got Domhnall Gleeson has a cameo scene, Brendan Gleeson's son, who we've talked about in Frank and In Time, was it called?
Yeah.
Who's a sort of rising star. He's very good in this, again in a straight role. Dylan Moran is in this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, again, very good. The one funny thing about it is basically the entire film is this priest who is a good man, but not in a sort of lame way. He's a genuine, kind person who has, you know, it lives in a world that is pretty dark and nasty and not very nice.
Why doesn't he just call the police?
Difficult to say. To watch it. There is a reason.
There's no signal.
No, it's not that. It makes sense. It's about who he is, and his own integrity is why he doesn't call the police. It works. It's very good. But because it is, you know, sort of one good man in a small Irish community with lots of panning shots of Irish fields and the sea and stuff, and everyone is sort of rotten in their own unique way around him, and you really feel like you're sinking in the mire of God, you know, humanity's awful, isn't it? And he is elevated in your estimation as a result because he's trying to, you know, remain good in it. But
is it a thriller?
It feels like it's not a comedy, it's a thriller. Yeah,
drama.
It's psychological, really. I'd say it's a psychological drama or thriller. But there is comparisons, weirdly, just as a fun thing, with it being sort of like a dark version of Father Ted, where there's all these people, you know, who all are weird and strange, and he's there on the island trying to keep his head above
water. Sounds like he should have moved away a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, it's very good. It is very good. In fact, I kept looking at it and going, I think the barman is the actor who played Tom, the guy with the shotgun who shoots a crow, with the T-shirt that says "I shot JR" on it in Father Ted.
I never really watched that Father Ted.
Oh, okay. Anyway, I think it's him. I might be wrong about that. Yes, no, this is well worth watching, and if you like The Guard, then you should catch it as well.
I must watch that.
Did you like The Guard?
I did like it.
Good.
A non-conventional thriller.
I like thrillers where the lead isn't the normal boring person who we're supposed to assume can do all of this stuff because they're handsome, you know? Whereas as soon as someone isn't handsome, you start to actually feel the jeopardy about everything they're doing again, because you go, oh, I'm not so sure what's going to happen in this outcome here, you know. No, well worth watching. And it's only this writer-director, this is only the second film he's directed, and The Guard was the first one.
Wow.
He's written films before. He wrote Ned Kelly, which I haven't seen.
No, me neither.
But so I'm looking forward to his third one now.
Superb. How many Davids?
You know, I think it's going to be a 9.
Wow.
Yeah, I really liked it.
That's a lot of Davids.
It's a hell of a lot of Davids.
Can you imagine how many of those Davids would be?
It'd be a bit much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, then.
Right. Well, yes. There's a good film for you and a bad film for you. So a 4 and a 9.
See you next time.
Yeah, see you next week.
Keep watching the films.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.